It's time now for It's Life You've Always Wanted, brought to you by Springfield Marriage and Family. Here are your hosts, W.K. and Ken Boyce. Good morning.
Good morning. We have with us this morning Ty Beasley, who is one of our counselors at Springfield Marriage and Family Institute. We're very proud that she's here with us on the program this morning. Good morning, Ty.
Good morning.
Good to have you here with us.
Thank you.
This morning, if you've not yet called anyone to say you need to listen to this program, I encourage you right now to call a friend and say what you're going to hear over the next hour is going to benefit your life. Because this morning we're talking about teens. I just want to ask you parents who have teenagers living in your home and have teen behavior this summer to evaluate and to keep in mind that they are teenagers, their mind and body are still developing, and that they will mature. Maturity is a great cure for teenage years. But this morning, if you have a call and would like to talk over behavior with us, then please give us a call at 862-9977 outside the area, 1-800-375-0056, or if you're away from the landline, star 56. I wanted to begin, perhaps you read or heard this past week about this coach who's 40 years of age who marries one of his 16-year-old students. This is on ABC News, it's posted on the 22nd of June. And this is a coach, this was a girls' coach, one of the schools, and they met when she was 14 years of age and began a relationship, and supposedly it was all very appropriate and very, very normal. And then the parents began to question whether or not this relationship was normal. They asked the school to investigate, and the school investigated and said, yes, it's normal. There's nothing inappropriate going on. Lo and behold, now she's 16 years old and determined to marry this man. And so what are the parents to do? Well, these parents gave in and signed a consent form for her to marry this 40-year-old man. What are your thoughts about that? Give us a call and let us know.
We'll do an impromptu survey here. 862-9977, 862-9977, or 1-800-375-0056.
Absolutely. Is that normal behavior?
I would think not. I think that gets a very red flag for parents, but at the same time they want to believe everything's going okay, especially when there's coaches and teachers and things like that involved, because those are supposed to be the people that take care of our kids and mentor them. So I don't think parents want to believe that something inappropriate could be going on.
What about the power differential in a teacher and a student relationship? How can that be overcome in what they're calling a romantic relationship?
Well, I think anytime the person's that much older, especially when they're, like you said, have that type of power, whatever, you know, they're their coach, they're going to probably be able to use things against them as far as, I won't let you, this girl I think was track and field athlete, so, you know, I'm not going to let you run in this race if you don't do this, you know, and that might not have been the case, but a lot of times in those relationships, that's easy for that person to do, or if you don't, you know, go along with this, I'm going to let your parents know what's going on, or it's just a very easy situation for that older person to control that younger person and use that power differential.
Absolutely. That's what I'm thinking. How could a 40-year-old man be interested in a 14-year-old girl to begin with? 38-year-old man at that time, I suppose. I mean, they're living in two different universes.
Definitely so.
Where they are in their lives.
Well, yes and no. But they're both at high school. Universe is still in the same.
Just get over here
and stir the pot, and everyone looks at me like I'm crazy. No, my point is, they're not out in the real world per se. They're in a high school. They're around the same people, the same friends. They're around the same staff, the same kids. They're running in the same circles, and that's a very bad pun to use for a track and field coach, but they're running in the same circles. So I think that even though he should definitely have known boundaries and have those boundaries set, I think it could become very easy to get through those boundaries just because of the nature of that particular relationship and the nature of the environment they're in, where it's not just at school time, but it's after school, it's running track and field, it's taking long trips, it's running and practicing. And, you know, the guy is 5 years older than me, and I don't feel much older than I was in my mid-20s or 18 coming out of high school. That's not something from our perspective that we feel that much older. Now, granted, this is crazy because he's 25 years older, but...
That's a quarter of a century.
Well, you said they were in totally different worlds. I was merely playing our devil's advocate and saying, no, they're in the same pot here. They're in high school. This is track and field.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure that these parents just went through all kinds of emotion, all kinds of feelings about this, and wondering, is this, how normal is this?
Yeah, is it normal?
How normal is this? Is it normal for teenagers to want to be loved and to be cared for, and for someone to find them attractive, and for someone to spend time with them? Sure, I think it's very normal. It's very normal. I think the boundaries are crossed, though, when someone who is older, who's in a position of authority with that child, and they are still a child, that person has a responsibility to keep that boundary, to keep those boundaries intact, to not cross those boundaries. I'm just amazed how many times over the past 2 years that teachers have been charged with molesting their children, molesting their students. And it's incredible, the number of female teachers who are molesting their middle school students. I mean, what would you do as a parent if you found out your child was being molested by a teacher? Okay, and it can be a teacher at school, it can be a Sunday school teacher.
I can't say that on the air. I apologize.
I'm sure.
Reaction.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, a lot of normal teenage behavior. Their teenagers are concerned about their appearance. They feel awkward about their bodies because their bodies are changing, and they feel about the time they get used to their body changes again, and it's hard to know where the limits are. They bump into things, run into doorways, and have pimples. All kinds of changes that are going on in their bodies. And then what their friends think of them become very, very important, and they follow their fashion styles of their friends. And I have concerned parents every once in a while ask me, my child wants to dye their hair blue. What do I do?
Laugh.
Well, that can be an end result. Ty, what do you tell parents?
I think it gets really hard for parents because they, you know, and for kids as well, because they want to fit in. They want to be liked. They want, you know, be cool. And I think parents want the same thing for their kids. You know, they don't want their kids to be the outcast or unpopular or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So I think the parents start walking that fine line between what's kind of normal and acceptable and what's just too much or what's over the line. And I'm not a parent, but I've seen a lot of kids push the line and parents not stand up. I think that's one of the biggest problems, is the parents kind of just giving in because they do want so much for their kid to be accepted or for them to be well-liked that mm-hmm. sometimes they just kind of back down and say, well, okay. You know, I think sometimes the parents are maybe a little bit out of touch. They don't really know what's going on. So they just don't really maybe investigate or just say, okay, you know, and kind of go along with it or try to play that friend role instead of that parent or authoritative role, and it ends up coming back on them.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you that don't know, Ty is new to the Springfield Marriage and Family Institute, but has been working significantly with teens, with adolescents that have some very interesting issues. The program that you were overseeing, what was the name of the program again?
It was the SAVE program at Good Samaritan Boys Ranch, which stood for Sexually Abusive Youth. It was the adolescents who had sexually abused other children, primarily.
And how long have you been working with adolescents and teens, et cetera?
Oh, goodness. Probably for the past 6 or 7 years, at least. Starting out pretty much before college or during college, I guess. So that's so kind of where I've always been.
Definitely been around the block as far as the issues and things that come up. And to see the red flags and to see what parents have or haven't done.
Definitely.
When you were saying that parents are out of touch, it doesn't mean necessarily that they don't understand. It's just that they're not keeping responsibility for their teenage kids and overseeing what's...
Right. I think sometimes maybe it's easier for parents to just be ignorant. You know, that whole deal of ignorance is bliss. It's easier if they don't know or investigate as opposed to if they find out that there really is something bad going on. I think maybe that's their fear sometimes, is if they do pry too much, they're going to find something out that they don't want to know.
We don't want to think that our kids ever have these kinds of issues or problems. I mean, that's something... That's hard to find out.
Definitely. We want our kids to be normal and healthy and not think otherwise. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I keep going back to the parents of the teens at Columbine who were making bombs in the garage. And the parents didn't know they were making bombs in the garage.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just an extreme metaphor for a lot of parents today who have no clue what's going on in their children's lives, what they're doing in their own home. Or in other friends' homes, or even where their other friends' homes are. Because they don't want to believe that their children could be involved in something that could be harmful to themselves or to other people.
Getting back to this coach, one thing that we haven't discussed here was talking about the parents. The parents really did, in this case, They went to everyone. They went to the coach. They went to the principal. They went to the school board. They went to the police to say something's not right here. And yet it still came down to this. The only thing that I see that the parents did wrong was they signed the consent form.
Right.
Quite frankly, I would have said no and if then charged him with statutory rape and thrown him in jail.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they're bound determined to get married, but this is something that, getting back to her as a 16-year-old, she didn't, I don't think she fully understood all the things that were going on and the choices that she had for marriage and what was happening there. I think the parents should have said, look, we're not going to condone this. We haven't done it from the beginning. Mm-hmm. You may be set out to do it, but we're also going to take every responsibility. We've gone this route and nothing's worked. I would have continued the fight. That's the one thing in this case that I hold against the parents is they kind of gave up.
They did give up, in my opinion. They gave up their responsibility. They gave up their parenting of their child. No, the name of this program is The Life You Always Wanted. And the life that is worth having, the life that we always want and that brings happiness and brings fulfillment, isn't a life that's based on easiness. It's not a life based on feelings, that feelings are our guide. It's a life based upon principle of what's right and wrong. And for parents to abdicate their responsibility. I had one parent tell me one time that they didn't want to tell their child no because their child may not like them anymore. I had another one.
It's not funny. I apologize.
That's not. I just don't think my parents cared if I meant no.
I had one mother bring her 14-year-old son to my office for counseling, and she came into my office. He went out the other way, went out the front door, was going down the block. She looked out the window. She turned to me and said, go get him. And I turned back to her and I says, you go get him. He's your son. That's part of your responsibility. If you want him in therapy, you go get him and you bring him in here. She looked at me like I was crazy. I don't think anybody had ever told her that she has to parent that boy. But for parents who are afraid that if you parent your child, if you put principles in their lives, and you stand for principle that's in your life as a parent with what's true and what's right and what's honorable and what's just, and that you expect the same thing in your child's life, that those are principles you're teaching them, then you cannot cave in when they become a teenager and they may not like you. Let me tell you something. I guarantee you they won't like you. And if you're afraid your child is not going to like you, then give your responsibility for parenting to somebody else who will do them right and do them justice and who will raise them correctly. Now, I'm not saying be authoritarian. What I'm saying is recognize behaviors on the part of children and those behaviors that are normal, those they want to dye their hair blue, let them dye their hair blue. You know, there's some principles. If it's not illegal, if it's not immoral, if it's not life-threatening, if it's not fattening, let them do it. Okay, you make over those again?
Please.
If it's not illegal, if it's not immoral, if it's not life-threatening, and if it's not fattening, then let your child do it. Part of teenage years are expressing themselves and learning who they are. Most of what teenagers do is not wrong, it's not harmful. It's just not what we did as teenagers. And every generation has that tug and pull as parents. And I guarantee you are having that tug and pull as the parent of a teenager. I guarantee it. But work with your child. Have rules, but have relationship with that child.
A lot of parents with teenagers have this where it's a battle of I'm the parent, you're the child.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about being a parent is realizing the fact that we are, as parents, working ourselves out of a job. One thing we do have is to be able to recognize what stage our children are in their lives and in their development. And because we're the parents, we still have the authority, but to be able to guide those children in letting certain boundaries go down because they're starting to take more responsibility for their lives,
mm-hmm.
but still within the boundaries of what we set
mm-hmm.
as the authority, as the parent, guiding this person into adulthood.
Yeah. And you brought up an important point, and that is that with teenagers, and Ty, let me ask you, with teenagers especially, that freedom only comes with the acceptance of responsibility. Is that the way you understand that?
Yeah, that's kind of, I think, the way that I look at it, especially from a therapeutic side, that so many times these kids, they want all these freedoms and they want to be able to go and do this and have these things, but at the same time, they don't want to be accountable. They don't want to show up at curfew or get their chores done or fulfill the responsibilities that they're supposed to fulfill. So it makes it real hard for a parent, I think, then to say, okay, you can if they're not doing their end of it. So I think they have to learn to be responsible before they can get those kind of privileges and freedoms and trust.
Yeah. I think a lot of teenagers want to be treated like adults.
Definitely.
And they don't want to be treated like small children because they're not small children anymore. But they're not adults yet either. Okay, we have a brochure at Springfield Marriage and Family Institute about teenagers. And the statement is, as I'm no longer a child, but I'm not an adult, where am I? And if you like one of those brochures, you can call us at the Institute at 417-882-6767, and we'll be happy to send you one of those brochures and more information about who we are and what we do, the work that we do in counseling. But teenagers are a weird creature to a lot of parents, a lot of adults, period. But teenagers are desperately wanting three things. First of all, to be understood for who they are, to be accepted unconditionally, not on the basis of how well they do because they're always messing up, but the fact that they are created in God's image and that they're special. And third of all, to be valued more than the whole world by their parents. That's what they're really wanting. All the while pushing against boundaries, all the while pushing against limits, all the while wanting to express themselves, because that's part of the work of leaving home. That's part of that work. That they can become an individual, and as Ken said a minute ago, that we're working ourselves out of a job that they are taking responsibility for their life, making decisions for themselves that are appropriate and that are good based upon principles.
So as the children grow, we as parents also have to grow and mature as parents.
Yeah.
Because our role changes as their lives change.
Yeah.
And as they enter different segments, we enter different segments.
Oh, yeah. And a lot of us get caught up in the fact that we're identifying with our teenagers' behavior because those are the things that we did. And we don't know if we have the moral authority or the authority of any kind to say you can't do that because we did those very things too. As a parent, yeah, we did a lot of really, really dumb stuff as teenagers. Okay, but we learned. We learned and we're still learning. As Ken said, we need to continue to grow. We grow up all over again when we have a child. No matter from infancy all the way till adulthood, we grow up all over again. And whatever issues were not resolved in our life at every developmental stage, we will address those again when our children reach that age. And so if you feel stuck with your teenager, if you have some struggles going on, give us a call and talk with us here at 862-9977. We're going to go to a break. On the other side of the break, we're going to come back and talk about some signs that raise concern. And you need to be concerned about some of these behaviors of our teenagers.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
My child arrived just the other day. He came to the world in the usual way. But there were planes to catch and bills to pay. He learned to walk while I was away, and he was talking for I knew it, and as he grew, he'd say, I'm gonna be like you, Dad, you know I'm gonna be like you. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know when, but we'll get together then, you know we'll have a good time then. My son turned 10 just the other day. He said, thanks for the ball, Dad, come on, let's play. Can you teach me to throw? I said, not today, I got a lot to do. He said, that's okay. And he walked away, but his smile never dimmed. He said, I'm gonna be like him, yeah, you know I'm gonna be like him. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. Coming home, Dad, I don't know when, but we'll get together then, you know we'll have a good time then. Well,
really came from college just the other day. So much like a man, I just had to say, son, I'm proud of you. Can you sit for a while? He shook his head and he said with a smile, what I'd really like, Dad, is to borrow the car keys. See you later, can I have them, please? And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon.
And we're back.
Yes, we are. We're back on this side of the break with Harry Chapin, a wonderful song that has a lot of meaning to it to a lot of different parents. My goodness, our kids grow up just like us, and we've grown up just like our parents. We just many times just say, I'm not going to be like him or her, and we find ourselves exactly like him and her. We want our children to grow up to be good, honest, decent people. And they grow up and be like us, as well as good, decent, and honest people. We have with us this morning Ty Beasley, who is one of our counselors at Springfield Marriage and Family Institute. We're very proud that she's here with us on the program this morning. Good morning, Ty.
Good morning.
We've talked about team behaviors. We've talked over the first half of the program about team behaviors and about the coach that married a student and all that kind of thing. But, you know, there's some typical team behaviors that are just, I mean, typical team behaviors. And they're not wrong. They're just team behaviors. And many times they are self-absorbed and they're self-centered, and they go from being overconfident to having low self-esteem and find fault with us as their parents, and they test our rules and our limits and our boundaries, and that's part of their role as teenagers. They may even revert back to childish behavior, you know, slamming doors and crying when we say no and when we enforce a boundary and the boundary's real. Those are very typical teenage behaviors. What are some teenage behaviors that raise concerns for parents, though, and that should be red flags? It should be red flags for parents that say, I need to watch this. I need to be aware of this. These are things that, yeah, we need to be perhaps more knowledgeable about.
Probably any drastic change as far as if it's schoolwork, if it's their moods, any teenager's mood's going to be up and down. But if it's a drastic change, if you find signs of depression, if they're not interested in activities and things like they used to be, any angry outbursts, if they're extremely oppositional, any signs of drug or alcohol use are going to be an obvious red flag. If they're having signs that might be physical signs of depression, such as chronic headaches, fatigue, stomach problems, boredom, things like that, that might just be more of a physical symptom as opposed to behavioral.
In working with the teens that you've worked with in the past, how many of them that you worked with, could their behaviors be tracked back to parenting versus this is just a bad child?
I'd say it'd probably be hard to give a percentage, but I'd say both. It can come from both.
We do have certain genetic tendencies as far as our temper,
sure,
and anger,
sure,
and that type of thing. But how many of these issues that you've dealt with could have been avoided with the right type of parenting skills, et cetera?
I would think a lot of them could. Like I said earlier, I think a lot of times parents tend to ignore things, like when the kids have the angry outbursts or they have the change in attitude, or if they start following the wrong friends. The parents just might not investigate, or they might not want to believe that something wrong is happening. So I think a lot of times, yeah, the parents could, if they just step in sooner and take responsibility as a parent, that they probably could catch some of those signs as opposed to letting it get further and further and further along to where more and more problems develop.
When you're working, now you've worked with the teens as well as their parents, as well as the
families,
family?
Yes.
The family unit as a whole.
Right.
What is the difference in working with a teenager and working with a family?
I would say one of the biggest differences is probably just that the parents are most times a lot more verbal, whereas the teens tend to, when their parents are around in family therapy, they either do one of two things. They either withdraw or they want to go against the parent. And mm-hmm. We kind of fight against everything that they're saying. But a lot of times the parents are more open about things than the teenagers are, or at least they're a little better able to express it. Sometimes, though, they want to tend to hide things because they don't want to look like bad parents. Might be the kid saying, hey, look, you do this. You're drinking or your whatever is a problem for me, like, and the parents want to hide it.
Yeah, like, where do you think I get the drugs and alcohol from? I got it from your stash.
Right, and then parents don't want to seem like bad parents, or they don't want to have their kids taken away or whatever the case might be. So it gets difficult when you're dealing with a family, especially if there's those things they're trying to hide, or the kid and the parent, which they usually aren't on the same page, but...
Yeah. Your experience, Ty, you worked a lot with teenagers, with adolescents, with families. What is the earliest age that parents should begin to watch?
I would say even as far as the elementary school age goes. I've dealt with a lot of kids who started developing problems, you know, when they were 7, 8 years old. And obviously there's facilities in Springfield that treat kids that are younger than that. I would say probably just any time. You mm-hmm. always have to keep an eye on your kid. You always have to look for those warning signs and what problems might exist.
7 or 8 years old.
Oh, I've seen younger than that, but I think parents think that that couldn't happen. Oh, kids can't have problems that young, but I've worked with, in my internship in St. Louis, there was a three-year-old, and I always tell this story that I walked in, wasn't even my first day, I walked in, and they were just kind of showing me around, and a three-year-old walked up, kicked me in the knee, and called me the B-word, you know, and I was just like...
Oh, 3 years old.
Yeah, I was like, you're three! So I think I started to have reservations then, like, is this really what I want to get into, but... Yeah, and that obviously is just a learned behavior, three-year-old. So, and that's where parents and environment and things like that come into play.
Right. I know I walked into a house one day in a visit that I was making, and that 18-month-old little boy who was sitting on the couch beside his dad drinking a beer. That was a new one for me at that time. I was surprised by that, at how young that child was. But I do know that children are engaging in behaviors or have oppositional defiant behavior at a very early age. They have adjustment reactions to losses in the family, to changes in the family. And there's a lot of things that our family is involved in, the changes that we go through. We move and there's job changes, there are income changes. All kinds of things are going on in the families, and the children are a good barometer about what's going on inside the family many times. And so we need to be aware of what's happening in the family to know that we have a perspective for the child. There's a lot of behavior that we can say that this is the child, but a lot of times this is the child in that family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We have Don from Springfield on the line. Don, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. How you doing?
I'm fine.
And you're talking about part of where the rubber meets the road in America the last 30 years of the family.
Yes.
And I heard Dr. Dobbs, there's strong-willed children and submissive children.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard Dr. Stanley, and he said, our children, and you send them off to universities, are being bombarded by ungodly thoughts, nudity, sex, violence. The media is promoting this, show the true colors. We're a sex-oriented society. We have drugs, alcohol, peer pressure. We need to teach our children the biblical principles of the Word of God. We need to reach them young for Christ's sake. And we are bombarded mm-hmm. every day in the media. We need to equip our children to stand firm on the Word of God. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Don. Appreciate your call.
And Don's right. As parents, this is a battle against the world. All right. The world is going to tell them to do anything they want. Parents, that's something we have to guide them through and to be able to deal with as they get out on their own. This is something we have to prepare them for. And as Don was saying, as far as having a moral foundation, if you can lay in your kids and teach them right and wrong and teach them how to make decisions, those are things that you equip your child with to be able to deal with life when you're not around. And Don's absolutely right. We have to be able to teach our kids and to be the parent. The influences that are out there are in complete opposition to that. Those are things that we can't control overall. We have to be able to teach our children, raise our children, to be able to recognize right and wrong, to be able to make the choices. They're going to make mistakes. They're going to have things happen, and they're going to suffer the consequences for those mistakes, but they will learn. We need to be able to give that foundation, that moral foundation. One of the biggest disservices we've done to our kids through the school system, is teaching that there is no right or wrong. It's merely opinion.
Mm-hmm.
When you teach someone, a child, that there is no right or wrong, that it's merely opinion, when you reduce them from being a created being, something of value, to being a genetic mutation, a genetic mistake, we have what happened in Virginia, where that kid had no recognized authority. He went in and shot 30 different people, killed them all.
Yeah.
Okay. When you get down to it, our jobs as parents is we have to raise our children to go into this world. And they're going to be an influence in one of two ways. It's either going to be good or bad. There is a right, there is a wrong.
You know, the concept that there's no person more dangerous than a person who feels that they are not accountable to anybody or to any authority, because they've not anything to lose. And if we don't teach our children that there is an absolute right and wrong, that they're absolute truths to be accountable to, then their opinion is just as good as mine, and their life is based upon their opinion and their feelings, and I have no right to say differently. And there's a lot of people who believe that. I know there are a lot of people who believe that, and I respectfully disagree with them.
I wholeheartedly do.
Yeah.
Well, and I think part of it comes along, too, that you can't try to start changing them when there's problems. You can't say, oh, well, now I'm going to teach you right from wrong, or now I'm going to decide to get you into church or give you that moral compass when the problems exist. That by then, when things like that, it's, I hate to say too late, but it's starting to get that way.
It's much more difficult.
Yeah. It should start out that way from the time they're born to then on, because it's a lot harder to retrain them or to start dealing with the problem then, because they've already gotten into habits and patterns of behavior.
Absolutely. They're much more teachable the first 5 years
oh,
of their
sure.
life. That foundation can be laid much more easily in the first 5 years of their life. We as parents must hold to the truths, we must hold to principles, and we must live with the boundaries and hold our children to them, to understand and to learn what their behaviors are, to see where they are.
Well, as we're getting ready to finish up the hour here, this program is brought to you by the Springfield Marriage and Family Institute. It was established to be the resource for you. We provide counseling by professional trained people that can help you make a difference in the future. Give us a call at 882-6767 and be able to seek that advice. It is much easier to be able to bring up a child in the way they should go. We have WK, we have Ty, any of the staff there.
Thanks for having me.
And so give us a call at the Springfield Marriage and Family Institute. It's your life.
Make it a great one.